All right, I'm with Wayne for the midweek pod. Wayne, so Jim Ratcliffe was watching today. Not sure if he was in his season ticket seat at Chelsea or in the director's box, but I don't think he'd have been impressed with that one.
It might have been for a little while. There were some impressive things in there, and I suppose the spectacle was impressive. But no, if you were judging it on quality, you would probably be thinking, that's not high on reward for that. Unfortunately, it was entertaining, but not quite the cut and thrust Chelsea Manchester United games that we were treated to like 15 years ago. So
definitely not top quality. I mean, we've seen a few different games in recent weeks, haven't we, of different styles. I mean, we had City and Arsenal boring everyone to death the other day with three-yard passes. Anything more than that and everyone got a nosebleed. And today was absolute chaos, which I guess is what United do now. And so do Chelsea's.
Yeah.
Old podcast host Paul was texting me in the WhatsApp group. I was going to skip this one because I thought it'd be dull. I was like, what? This was never going to be dull.
Yeah. So. I mean, there was that's the one thing you could have probably banked on, really, is that there was going to be some kind of mayhem in there. There was an interesting quip, I thought, by the TNT spoke lead commentator, Darren Fletcher. Obviously not the noble, esteemed Darren Fletcher with multiple Premier League titles to his name, but Darren Fletcher, the TNT spoke commentator, and he comes out with a quip, something like, United players don't look like they've got the aptitude for the game. Something like that. Like they weren't putting the effort in. And I thought, it's very interesting that, because obviously this is in the ebb and flow of a football game and you don't know how it's going to transpire. You don't know how all the things are going to turn out. And obviously it was made to look like a bit of an idiot because of United's comeback sort of suggested they've got a lot of fighting spirit. But it did make me think of a few observations that Fergie made around the turn of the century, you know, with the evolution of role in media and everything like that. And now, I think he'd made a quip to newspapers, how the journalists about how the 24-hour news coverage, because this was a time probably before Facebook and, well, mostly Twitter, which is a game changer there, but about how the 24-hour news coverage was putting the newspapers out of business because of the nature of it. So they had to be more creative with the stories. So I think he was taking the piss out of someone's transfer rumor or something like that. But obviously then you skip forward a generation from that and now you've got to be even more reactive than breaking news on social media. You've got to be sort of constantly reevaluating what something is within the dynamic of a game. And it's interesting that people do still do that because you can be proven to be such an idiot within the space of seconds. But I think now people have got such short attention spans that the opinion doesn't matter anymore, which is a very strange evolution of the game itself. But the thing is that certain elements of that are right because, I mean, I think the modern player is so reactive to that kind of trend. You've seen it, I mean, even earlier today before we recorded this, you've got to see Rashford's brother coming out and making a sin.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's a sensitivity there that players are reactive to the micro analysis that you're seeing, and it does have an impact on the ebb and flow of a game. So even though the commentator gets it dead wrong, but the point I'm making really with that is that the commentator gets it wrong in terms of we'll probably throw many insults or criticism at this Manchester United team throughout this podcast. One of the things that you can't say is that they weren't putting the effort in because the effort was there.
Yeah.
Like we've said in previous managers' reigns, they've given up on the manager. Obviously, that's not the case here, but they're just not very good. That's what we saw at the end of the game.
Well, it's not just that they're not very good, and I think that's a fair observation. It's that they're quite dumb. One of the lowest IQ teams in the league, I think. And that's both at a sort of macro level with the system that Ten Hag has chosen to take on this season, whether he's reacting to injuries or otherwise. I think it's quite dumb. 28 shots against today, and it's a pattern, right? Not a feature, not a bug of United's play that we concede a lot of very similar goals and concede a lot of shots and entries into our box, but also at micro level. I mean, was it all four goals really quite preventable? Anthony's foul, knee on knee, Dallow's foul, cutting Lallana played a cut across him and rather softly taking him out. I mean, they're two soft penalties, I'll give him that. Onana leg one in under his body again.
Yeah.
No one going out to close down Cole Palmer for the winner. Have I got all four goals in there? I might have.
Yeah, you have. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot to unpack there. I will say the Anthony one with the... It was a strange one because Anthony then goes on to have probably his best game for the club, right? After the penalty mishap. But then the thing I was thinking of, obviously, you watch a game as a football fan, as a United fan, and then there's the other element of it that thinking you're going to think of some things to talk about when we're going to be talking about it later. And one of the observations that I thought of making was, well, Anthony concedes a penalty like that, but I don't think he's ever won a penalty for us like that. He never makes that kind of run. And then he goes and obviously probably one of the best assists that we've ever seen. So fair enough, he recovers from that. But all in all, yeah, I mean, everything about it was dumb. I did feel the Dallow one was very harsh because in slow motion, you can tell it's not enough contact to bring him down. But at the same time, in real time, it's such a dumb decision to take. And then, I mean, Cole Palmer's caused grief all game. He's caused grief to opponents all season. Why are you going to give him that kind of space? You're literally asking to lose the game in the last kick of it. And United,
for sure,
with that kind of chaotic end, were inviting. It was masochistic, really, in a way. Like the team was just like, "Come on, just do it to us, put us out of our misery." And what? How did it get to that? I just don't understand how we got to that. Because before the penalty award, we'd be having a very, very different conversation about what that. Maybe not like, you know, I'm talking about microanalysis in patterns of game. So I don't think we'd be coming on here and making any definite conclusions in saying United were taking one significant leap forward. But you would be praising their shedding of what happened against Brentford. And the thing is, there's so much chaos within this United team, which lends itself to the enjoyment of watching it in some kind of way, but also leaves you with no hiding place, no way to suggest that there's a way forward for this squad, because there is no way forward for them. This is the end of this cycle. Something has to be done.
It has to be. It's we would have had a different conversation if they'd just held out for 3 minutes or whatever. Of course, because it would have been a victory, but I don't think we'd have had different analysis about exactly what the players were doing on the pitch, the mistakes they were making, or the pattern that Ten Hag has chosen, and the types of goals United concede, and the fallibility of the coaching that clearly comes through as a result of that. I don't think we'd be having a different conversation in a wider sense. I mean, of course, we lost the game, so that does change things somewhat, and we've lost the game with two preventable goals. Now, we can blame Jared Gillette. Or is it Gillet? He's Australian. Good day, mate. And sorry. I apologise. Apologise for that anti-Australian tirade right there. I've been traumatised by the cricket from childhood. So we can complain about the penalty, but Dallow got himself wrong side. He then tries to dribble out in the 98th minute, loses the ball from which Chelsea get the corner, and no one tries to close Cole Palmer down. I mean, it's just horrendous. Just horrendous. Anthony penalty, soft as fuck, of course. But, you know, there's a knee-on-knee contact. He doesn't need to be hanging out a leg there. But wider than that, if you allow the opposition to have so many touches in your box, I haven't actually looked at the stats, but it's 85 at the weekend. I'm sure it's a very high number today.
Yeah.
They're going to get moments like that, right?
Yeah.
Ten Hag has tried to defend himself. He said, we do good box defending, right? He's admitted that they are playing this game where they let the opposition come onto you and they try and hit on the counter. If you allow a team that many, you know, entries into your own box and that many shots, things happen. I just think we bring it on ourselves.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there's also another element of consciously making it a point, when I think the best United teams have been open and they've allowed that. I don't think there's any shame in that, because it lends itself to an open and flowing game. But if you start articulating the fact that you do that, then you are giving players an excuse. And I think that this is a United squad that likes excuses, because if you say it's part of the system, you are sort of you're removing culpability from the players. So they're like, oh, well, we're expected to face 20 shots. There was an interesting observation that's been made over the last few weeks and about the number of cutbacks the United have conceded from. And I don't really like analysis on that level as a rule, because I think that you concede between 30 and 50 goals a season if you're a good team. I know there was a Chelsea team that like lost 15-0 or something in the league. Generally, no, a good team might lose 30 or 40 goals a season. So you are going to let goals in. All the best teams do that. So and there'll be a common trend of kind of goals that you concede. There'll always be one more than the other, because that's the nature of everything. So to define that as a way to get into this United team seems a bit flimsy, considering the, like you said, like this conceded like 200 shots. So it'll be nearly 250 now in like 10 games, which is just ludicrous. So
it's also nearly 550 over the season. It's only Sheffield United and Luton have conceded more shots, not just in the Premier League, across all five top European leagues.
Well, the point I'm making with this is that it's a bit weak then to say that they only concede from cutbacks, because they let every single kind of shot come at them. You know what I mean? It's just right. They just happen to do that. And also the fact that, I'm not doing this to give an excuse, but the fact that we've had that many defensive injuries, there's no defined system within any four players at any given time. I mean, how many times has that changed? The defensive change tonight?
Yeah. And I'm reluctant to point fingers at like lots of different individuals, because, I mean, really, apart from Garnacho, and he was partly culpable for the first goal, by the way, by not covering his fullback after Dalot went wandering. There's like most of these players come out with a fair degree of criticism being laid on them, don't they, because of this performance today. And so, and so does the manager.
Yeah.
And like those patterns, and we're very good at humans recognizing patterns. We're kind of trained to do it over billions of years of evolution or whatever. And we recognize the patterns. And it seems like every man and his dog, at least every United fan on the planet, and definitely on Twitter, has recognized that we concede goals from cutbacks. But yeah, we concede every kind of dumb, lazy, out of position goal possible. Yeah. And all those defensive changes, they can't help. Some of them, though, which is the point I was originally going to make, you kind of want to point the finger at Ten Hag, not just for how United defend, but also the risks he takes with players. Johnny Evans, just back from injury, straight back into the team today, injured again. Not surprised. Varane, just back from injury, injured again. We had at the weekend, Lisandro Martinez, just back from injury, injured again.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this is a pattern I'm seeing and we're all seeing that doesn't exist, but it sure as hell seems like it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised whether Ten Hag, desperate as he is to try and get a turnaround, he says he doesn't care what the owners think of him. Of course he cares. We all care about what our managers think of us in the workplace. Of course he cares. And his reputation will suffer if he gets fired at the end of this season. He cares. And he's desperate, and he wants results, and he's making some pretty desperate decisions. A lot of it, you'd point your finger at him, though, and go, was that sensible? Was that right? So Varane injured, Evans injured in the back line today, end up with Willy Campuala, played, what, two games this season, something like that.
Yeah, I think he's at fault
for the goals, but right at the end. But, hey, there's chaos, and and some of it's on Ten Hag.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not. There's a further point I'll elaborate on in a moment with Ten Hag, which I agree with the wider point that you're making. But then what you're saying really is the answer is to start with Kambuola, and you know from the start of the Brentford game really, and then ease the other players in. And then, like saying, he's only started two games before. So, what's, you know, all of it's a risk at that point. And all of it's a risk is because of the injury crisis. So, but there are other things like the first time tonight, and I'm sure you'll probably agree with me. And I know that you're on record as being a renowned McTominay critic, but I think probably for the first time tonight, we looked at it and said, when McTominay came off Casemiro, I'm sure you were the same as me, thinking, it's probably pretty sensible.
Yeah, yeah.
In the circumstances, I thought, do you know what? Yeah, I can understand it.
I thought he should have been on at half-time, to be honest. Casemiro looked like, honestly, you'd be getting the shields out, wouldn't you, at the end of the Grand National and shooting the horse. That's how bad he was in that first half.
Well, okay. But I wouldn't go that far, but I see where you're going. But the other point I was going to make was about Rashford. Now, I made an observation on this podcast maybe 4 months, might be a long time, but I feel like it was that amount of time ago where I was trying to think of a point in history that you can compare this United team to. And I was thinking at the time the 2005-06 team, because it felt like there were a lot of things in place. There were some young, good players to build around, and there was like a projection if all went smoothly. But it's difficult to look at this and now, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, and I'm looking at like the pattern of the season, yes, all right, the injuries and everything like that, but also the decisions of the manager. And the reason why I'm saying that is because if you look at the 2005-06, and all right, Fergie had the benefit of he'd been in the job long enough and he wasn't going to get fired, and the stability of knowing that he could take risks with the decisions that he was making. But the point is that he still made them, and you do have to take risky decisions, especially when you... I mean, Rob Smythe, who I absolutely love, is writing, and if Rob's listening, big love to you, great. He wrote the infamous article in The Guardian, like Fergie was shredding his legacy at every turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And sorry, Rob, because I know he probably hates that headline, but he's
I'm sure, no doubt, he's sick of it. Yeah, yeah.
No, but for the same reason that Alan Anson is, the line that he said in 95, and the point is that it was an astute observation, and it was only made ridiculed by how miraculous the turnaround was, really. Because it was unexpected what happened. And the point with the things that Fergie was doing in that period of time, he was doing things that were unexpected in order to jolt a massive turnaround. So getting rid of Keane, which, all right, he was 30 odd, it was time to move him on, but it was still a massive decision. He got rid of Van Nistelrooy when Sahar wasn't really proven at that kind of standard, and Rooney and Ronaldo were still inconsistent. So these decisions were risks, but he took them, and it was for the better of the team. Ten Hag is making decisions of a manager who's under pressure, like the ones that you just mentioned with the defensive things, because he doesn't have the feeling of stability of a long-term position. And that leads to other decisions, which, like, for example, Rashford, bringing him on for Hoyland. And Rashford did nothing in the entire game that he came on for. He did nothing. He offered nothing apart from, and I'm sure you can remember this, I always remember it from Rooney's debut, and I'm sorry that I'm harking back to the past, but it's good for comparisons. Rooney used to do this thing where he'd been just inside his own half, and then he'd just turn around and belly out for a corner to the opposition, and he did it on his debut. I'm sure that you can remember that a couple of times. Just like, what are you doing, Rooney? And I don't know what he was doing, but he did it. And Rashford did something similar tonight. It was unchallenged, not under a lot of pressure, I should say, and then he belted the ball out for a corner, thrashed it out, and that's the only thing I can remember him doing in the game, because he didn't do any closing down. He didn't do any real defensive work apart. There was one jog back at the end. And he was brought on for that purpose. He was brought on not really to win the game. He was brought on to kind of close those avenues down. And what I'm thinking is, if you are a manager, and I'm not blaming it, by the way, I'm not digging Rashford out for this, because I know that Rashford doesn't do that. And Ten Hag knows that he doesn't do that. So why are you bringing him on to do that in a game like this? Now, this game is probably, it means nothing in terms of the league. It means nothing in terms of the Champions League, really, because I don't think anyone now expects United to get there. But it means something in terms of Ten Hag's responsibility of decision-making, because we know what he can't do. And that didn't lead directly to either of the goals. But that kind of decision-making is a cog in the wheel that does lead to those decisions.
Yeah, I did think it was a little odd. I mean, given the nature of the game and how chaotic it was actually set up very well for Rashford to be an agent of chaos in an attacking sense. And he came on for Højlund and played off to the left and as you say, supposedly, I suppose, to offer some cover as well as a potential attacking threat. Just the 13 touches from Marcus today.
That seems high. I didn't realise it was that high, to be honest.
I mean, 13 touches in half an hour. Yeah. To come back to your point about Rob, I don't know him well. I mean, obviously, he knows Dan very well. I bet Rob the once, and I think just the once. So we were having a drink in a Dutch pub in Soho in London. And he complimented me on the quality of what was then the United Rant blog. So thanks, Rob. And I can't remember who shredded their own personal legacy first, whether it was Rob or me, but on the 4th of November 2005, I wrote a piece in The Guardian asking for Fergie to be sacked. I have to say, I was egged on somewhat by Sean Ingle at The Guardian at the time. So I made it entertaining. Didn't exactly cement my legacy as a great football commentator, did it? Even worse than calling for Fergie to be sacked, clearly a world-class opinion there from Ed, I suggested as potential people to take over, Paul Le Guen, Martin O'Neill, Fabio Capello, or Marcello Lippi. Some of them are good. Well, at least Marcello Lippi's good. Or was.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that there's some suggestions are better than others. God. Yeah. But that was a sign of the times, all right. And Capello and Lippi were great coaches.
It was pure anger on my part at both of the Glazers taking over. So 6 months after the Glazers had taken over and Fergie's role in that and his obstinance about fan anger. And I took that all very personally. So there you go. Anyway, just to say, we all make stupid comments. Unfortunately, on the podcast, people seem to forget them and tweets, they forget even quicker.
So. You could roll out those four names now and they'd be just as convincing as any others that are suggested. That's how bad the candidate list is, to be honest. But I'm not here to write any obits for Ten Hag's era, but I just think I'm not. And by the way, I'm still in the position of thinking what will be, right? I do think that if he doesn't qualify for the Champions League, and especially if we don't win the FA Cup, that it's going to be very difficult to justify him keeping his job, despite what I think about the lack of good candidates out there, because the results speak for themselves. But I personally wouldn't judge him on the failure in that regard. What I would look at is the individual decisions when it comes to the players in the squad, the pathway forward, because if you don't have anything else, you at least need to have a manager who has a complete grasp on what his squad can and can't do. So the defensive side of it, which you're saying, and I do take on board and agree with, I still think that it's such a fluctuating situation with the injuries that, for example, tonight I might have sort of cursed him a little bit for switching Dalot and Wan-Bissaka, because Dalot for the first 10 minutes looked all over the place. He improved, but he looked all over the place. I'm like, why have we moved in there when you've clearly shown reluctance to do it? But fair enough. But the other decisions where he's got choices to make and he can make them and they don't seem to be going right. Like for example, starting Martial against Bournemouth. And I mean, now you look at a season as a whole and you say, well, it's a dead rubber of a season for so long and it's good to exercise the options in the squad and see what we can and so that all the players have had all the rope that they need. But we've been there. We have been there so many times. Like for 4 years we've been there. We know what all of the players can and can't do. And it's all right saying, oh no, the manager's seen it. Well, this is the time that he should have learned these lessons. Yeah. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not the Rashford decision in particular, which I am criticising, I'm not holding that as the one that's responsible for losing the game. It's just indicative of the minor decisions and the chain effect that ends up in this brain fart that we see. Because what if you don't have a manager who's got complete faith in, and all right, injuries notwithstanding again, if you don't have a manager who's got a complete vision of what he sees from the squad that he has, you have a squad that don't have a complete vision in what they're supposed to do. And if they're aimless, if they're objectiveless, like this squad seem to be, and they seem to have been for a long time, especially when they've sort of lost their way in seasons, and you know that they're not going anywhere, and you know the kind of performances they put in that are just like the one that we saw tonight, then you do blame the managers, you do blame the players, but you do have to then start looking at the manager, and that is a concern. It is a concern.
Look, with Ratcliffe in the stands tonight, Brailsford attending loads of games, Berada coming in, Ashworth coming in, Wilcox coming in, they're making a complete structural overhaul of the football side of things. It looks like they're going to appoint a chief business officer. Looks like Ineos have this much wider brief. They're basically in control of the club now. I think it's just natural that the manager is going to come under scrutiny. Like senior leadership would be looked at in any organization. I've been there, seen it. Like when you get a CEO change, it all cascades down. So whether Ten Hag was successful this season or not, he would be analysed and scrutinised. I mean, the fact is, United lost 17 games this season. There's almost no chance we're going to make Champions League, which makes a really big difference in terms of revenues and United's ability to make the changes that are required. We've got the FA Cup to come. I mean, I wouldn't bet by the time that semi-final comes around that we haven't lost 18 or 19 games, given the fixtures that are coming up. Hey, touch every piece of wood, including my head here, that we don't lose to Coventry City. But I mean, I would put quite long odds that Ten Hag keeps his job. And that's not me saying bin him. There's many, many high quality things about him, I think. He said this week, don't stop the progress, which I thought was interesting, an interesting statement. I'm not sure it's you could really call this season progress, but he's of course he's under pressure.
It's an interesting thing though that quote in particular, because I think you've got the manager bound to come out and say something like that. The things that I'm critical of, I don't think Ineos would take that deep a look at it, or Ratcliffe, I don't think he would. I think he'd look at the overall numbers, like what you're saying, the 17 defeats, because I mean they're alarming failure for a Champions League place when we qualified for it last season. Failure to win any trophies, if that's what happens, not looking any closer to winning a league title, which I'm not saying you will have to be on the precipice of it. You would have at least wanted to have seen us journey towards that. And I'm not saying that we're not closer than we were under Rangnick. We are, but I don't think that that's saying that we're close. Do you know what I mean? So we're not, we are closer to it, I guess. But it's not progress in the way that Ten Hag, I think he meant to say it. And I think the little things that I'm looking at, the little things that alarm me, which are those decision making, the individual decisions over the different players in the squad and the systems that we're seeing and or not seeing, and the way that we're throwing away games, those are the things that are indicative of something going the wrong way. And I say that reluctantly because I wanted to go the right way. Obviously, I do. Everybody does. But when you see what happened at Brentford, when you see what happened tonight against Chelsea, it's not good. It's not good. And you can't look at there and say, like, well, there are positive signs. And like, you know, oh, it was good. You know, I'm a positive person. I try and look at things on the optimistic side. But you don't look at Mount scoring and say that's the good thing to take from that game. You don't look at Garnacho continue, because one thing we should be talking about tonight is Garnacho continuing this good rise that he's got, scoring two good goals. Because that's you remember Ronaldo against Arsenal in the tunnel game where Ronaldo scored two goals. And all right, it wasn't the definitive Ronaldo performance, but what it was, is it was a statement of a progression. And that was kind of what we saw tonight from Garnacho. But the rest of the team is so chaotic that you're not talking about that. You're talking about all the rest of it.
He's got another couple of goals tonight. So that's 9 in total for the season, or 10 goals and assists in the league. It's good. It's very good progress from him. He was the out all of the time. We should be talking about that because he's got a couple of goals. Fine finish for this first one. Brave for the second one. And we should be talking about one of the assists of the season from a player that has contributed almost nothing to the team all season and pulls out. I mean, he's good tonight, by the way, Anthony. I think it's worth praising because he worked really, really hard.
Yeah.
Apart from the mistake for the penalty he conceded, soft as it was. But that is one of the best assists you'll ever see. Outside of the foot, 60 yards across two defenders. Just, I mean, just brilliant. Absolutely world class. I don't know where he's pulled that one out from.
One of the things I was going to suggest is, well, I was going to say when we started is, could we play you every week? But obviously not if we're going to lose 4-3 every week. But on the basis of, because there was one thing that happened in the first half as well, where for the first goal, Bruno, it's this bloody awful, aimless Bruno-style pass that just goes up and out. And he's only Anthony chasing it. And his first touch is actually quite good to keep it in play. And that's the start of the play that Caicedo hits the wrong pass and Garnacho runs through and scores from. So it's important to remember that Bruno just did a hospital ball, and Anthony's, it's not an assist, but it's as crucial as one for the first goal. And yeah, you're quite right, the second, the actual assist for Garnacho's second is just out of this world. But I mean, when you used to watch Ronaldo and Ashley Cole, and it was a compelling battle. I don't know. If you're as old as me and you, Ed, Ryan Giggs against Gary Kelly, a battle of pace, Gary Kelly, good defender, but Giggs would always get him for pace. Kanchelskis against anyone. But Anthony against Cucurella. I thought Cucurella was quite quick. But Anthony did him 4 or 5 times. Anthony must have
for
thought...
pace, I know.
Anthony with pace 12, I guess, for the Football Manager nerds out there. Pace 12. Cucurella, I thought, was 15 at least, but he was 9. He was nowhere near him. I was how has Anthony got around him 3 times and burned him off, by the way?
By the way, defends like a 9-year-old. The rating was on. That is nearly 200 million euros. Well, what was Cucurella? 70 million, Anthony was 80 million, £150 million of talent right there.
Anyway, yeah.
And Anthony pulled that. Just absolutely brilliant. Stunning. I don't know. There's a player in there somewhere, I suppose. I mean, I'm not sure it's much of a good one as a whole package, but just brilliant. And so, we should be talking about those good parts of the game. I mean, United scored 3 goals. Again, it's quite a few now.
Yeah.
It's all for nothing if you concede 4. In the manner that they conceded in the 98th minute.
Yeah, and the other thing is that apart from, like I said earlier, the brain farts, is this being a trend. Now, it's great to see the resilience of this team. Great to see that they've got heart. Great to see that there's something in there that they believe in the manager, because I think those things are unsure. I've been on this podcast. I've been critical of a squad that looks like it doesn't have the heart and commitment to the club. This squad does. But like I said, it doesn't have the capability, which is a different criticism. You can't really criticise them for not having the capability because they want to do good. But there is a base level of seeing a game out. And there have been too many games this season that United have thrown away in the last. And not just, they've been in positions where, and we've seen it, I've got the numbers, but they're plentiful of scoring a goal, conceding straight away, or conceding a goal straight from a favourable situation, or conceding so many goals in injury time. I mean, the way that we lost to Fulham a few weeks ago, that I remember, and I'm not harking back to the Ferguson era to make a point of going back to the Ferguson era, but what I'm talking about is that any good team that has got ambitions of going anywhere, it's a short, sharp shock like the Fulham game or like the Arsenal game earlier in the season, and it doesn't happen again for a long time. These things that have happened, now it's Fulham, Brentford, Chelsea, all recently, they're indicative of a trend. And if they're indicative of a trend, that means that there's qualities in the players and the management and the set tactical setup, but and the players as well, that suggests that this kind of thing is likely to happen. And if this kind of thing is likely to happen, then everyone needs to show responsibility for it. But it's almost like earlier in the wilderness years, there was this "we go again" and it was so hated, so it stopped happening, and that doesn't happen now, but thankfully, because we wouldn't want to see that now. But it's almost like we don't talk about it. We don't talk about the elephant in the room, which is why we're like the main reason of all these results in the last few weeks. But we should be talking about it, because that's the reason. Like, it's like, oh well, we'll keep trying, and then like every day is like a, you know, every fresh day is like a new slate. And like, don't get me wrong, it's in the past, you move forward. But it's not in the past, because it's present in all of the games. And if it's present in all of the games and it's still there, like the 12th man on the pitch, which is, I don't know, Concedo, the great goal conceder. He might as well be called Anana, the goalkeeper at this rate. But the magician on the pitch that pushes the ball into the net. The United are, they're hamstrung, they're handicapped by this. You know, I'm going earlier, I'm saying all the different players, I'm talking about the injury crisis and the management system, but this is a character trait. And if it's a character trait, it's either part of the system or it's part of the personnel. Now, the personnel's changed too often to blame the personnel. So where's the finger dropping? Do you know what I mean? And nobody's taking responsibility for it. Everyone has to take responsibility, because it's an everyone kind of thing.
Well, I think it will happen, right? There will be responsibility, because there's going to be a lot of change. And Ralf Rangnick said that United required open heart surgery. He wasn't wrong. He was the wrong manager for United, clearly, but he identified the problem without being able to offer a solution. And I guess last season we thought that Ten Hag was part of that solution. I just don't know whether you get away with... You don't get away as a manager with this many defeats in a season normally. And I wonder whether he was spared just a little bit because of the takeover situation dragging on for so long. And now, new management team in, suspect they'll be looking very hard at it. But that's not... And when I say that, I don't mean that it means we forgive the players for the mistakes they make. And tonight, we saw some really dumb ones. We praised Dalot this season. He actually seemed, for large parts of this season, to be an improved player. I think he's had a pretty bad night tonight. Andre Onana just won Player of the Month for United. He dived over one today. I mean, so it's there, isn't it? It's in the background of all these players that very few of them are consistent and very few of them are going to come out of this season deserving any praise.
Yeah, but this is the other thing, that to make that comparison back to 05-06, and I'm only doing that because a great team emerged from the green shoots of that team.
Yeah.
And you want to see green shoots in all of the teams when you're not winning everything. Where are the green shoots? Because sooner or later, whatever those green shoots are, they get swallowed by the dirt and the disease, which is afflicting the entire team. And we've seen that with good players over the years. And Onana had a good run. And now, you know, like I said, it once swarmed over him, under him today. Menu, I mean, look, Menu was class again tonight. He was the one area that you look at him, you think, whenever anything happens wrong with him, it's usually someone giving him an hospital ball or someone not having the red switched on to receive the ball. And I've said on this pod a few times about how I think players make, we've got a few players who make selfish decisions in that they try a pass that will be completed, but it doesn't put a teammate in good positions. That happens to Mainoo quite a lot, but Mainoo isn't one of those players. He's very conscientious of what he does with the ball. But I saw a couple of players do it to him tonight where I'm like, you're making him look bad. He's not a bad player. No, he played one bad ball, but there were a couple of hospital balls put into him. But there were a couple of balls put into him that it was impossible for him to do anything with. And I'm thinking, you've got to, that's again, it's the communal responsibility. You've got to help each other out. And I think that maybe there's that element, we're in April, players winding down, thinking, I'm not going to be here for long, and we're not really challenging for anything. It doesn't really matter what I do.
Yeah,
I'm not here to name
some of that. Yeah,
I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I think that it can be a malaise that sort of hangs over a squad like a fog, and it might be a natural human thing. I don't know, but United, we've seen too much of it over the years, and it's too familiar. And look, all right, losing 4-3. What's more enjoyable? Is it losing 4-0 to Brighton as we did a couple of years ago? Or is it losing 4-3 in the way that we did tonight? Because I'll tell you right now, I did not enjoy tonight. I enjoyed the game. And I enjoyed, even if it had finished 3-3, I would have still come on here enjoying the game. But I feel like I've been kicked in the gut. And this is a United team, by the way, that defeat shouldn't mean anything, because it means nothing in the context of where we were going, where we were meandering to the end of the season. It means nothing. But it means something in the element of it being meaningless, that you know we're no closer to going where we need to be. And it's so frustrating to see that, because I can be optimistic every time we talk. But when you're not seeing those green shoots, we've got players, we've got Kobbie, we've got Garnacho, but you can see them being swallowed by the mess or wanting to get out of it. There's not enough there that says, we're building the foundation around that and we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's worrying, especially in the way that we lost tonight. Not that we lost, in the way that we lost.
Well, the direction of travel is towards Liverpool on Sunday, and we've got to think about that. Oh, man. I mean, look, it's only a couple of weeks since we beat them in the FA Cup. That was an equally chaotic game. I cannot believe that Jurgen Klopp will allow that style of game to happen again. I don't think so. I'd be really surprised if they're as open as they were on that day, and it was much of a cup game. Cliche, a cup game. So, and obviously they're fighting for the title. There's nothing we'd love more, to paraphrase the great Kevin Keegan, than to take this title away from Liverpool by beating them. Something like that. Yeah. I don't expect it. I think the nature of how United lost tonight, I think will have a repercussion. I don't think there is a let's go again mentality in this squad, as you were noting there. They are very chastened by defeats. They seem to take setbacks very personally. Don't think it fires them up in some way. Don't think it's going to change the organisation. So I was very worried about the Liverpool Cup game. Clearly wrong to be. I'm very worried about this game, even though it effectively means nothing now. The chances of United making the Champions League have got to be in the single-digit percentage now. Very, very small. Yeah. And it's pride in our own performances and pride in making sure Liverpool don't give Jurgen Klopp a send-off of a Premier League title, right?
Yeah. But again, individual pride and not communal pride, because I don't think there's a squad mentality, especially with the injuries, because you've got this diversity of players that were available and there's a mismatch there, and you don't know what defence is going to come out. And even if you do, even if you can figure out what team's going to play on Sunday, you still look at it and think they're not expected to win, they're expected to lose heavily. And more than it being a squad that doesn't have the "we go again" mentality, it's a squad that takes excuses that are offered to them. And Unfortunately, I don't like saying that because we were saying a couple of years ago it's a very unlikable squad, and then we grew to like them, even the ones that were on the periphery, because you wanted them to prove you wrong. They were giving you, like, even Maguire, for all the turmoil, he's obviously put in the hard yards and it means something to him. So you can see that. And the offence is that he's not good enough, which is not really an offence. But you look at, you're absolutely right with your observation with the way that we won against Liverpool. It's the chaos ball element of it and the fact that it was a knockout. And yeah, there was I think for a long period in the second half of that game, there was because Liverpool had the control and they could have scored more.
Yeah.
And in the periods of extra time where Anthony was playing at left back, and even when he wasn't, but when Bruno was a centre back, they had so many breaks and their attitude was kind of like, these chances are going to keep coming, and they were kind of blasé about the way that they were finishing. It wasn't a typical Liverpool will punish these guys for making these mistakes, because they knew that they'd keep coming. So that kind of helped us in a way. But they won't make that mistake again. They won't do that again. They'll know that, and they'll know to be brutal this time. They'll get that many chances, probably, because we are giving up the chances.
Certainly.
So it is an element of, can we keep scoring? And I think it's the same as everyone. I'm not confident that that's going to be the case, because he scored 3 tonight against a quite porous Chelsea defence. And this Liverpool defence have got something to prove by not conceding as many chances. And they're better at being concentrated, at stopping those chances, much better than what we are. And yeah, they've got something bigger. I know, like, all this sort of nonsense, this means more and everything, but it will mean more to them in the way that they've got something to play for.
Like, they're chasing something, yeah.
Yeah.
And 29 shots, 83% possession against Sheffield United tonight, although you kind of expect that. So.
Yeah, well, they were playing against, now I'm not going to say, because
Sheffield United, who concede the most chances of any team in the top five leagues, Luton the next, United the third. So will we concede another 30 chances? It'll definitely be over 20, because it always is.
Yeah.
I guess the bigger question is, like, who's actually going to be fit? Because Ferran's come off for the second time in a week or a couple of weeks or whatever it is. And he didn't look good, did it? He wasn't moving very well at all. No. Johnny Evans had to come off. That would suggest that Willy Crumbarlo will probably start with Maguire at the back. Casemiro had a stinker tonight. He just doesn't look right at all. But what other options are there? Maybe Scott McTominay starts. Don't know. Which means you're putting a lot of minutes on Maynou, but you kind of have to. It'll be his 15 starts out of the last 17 games from Maynou tonight. I assume it'll be 16 in 18. The weekend, Garnett will have to start. Anthony, you'd have to say, has probably earned a start, hasn't he? Because he had a good game tonight, and it would be unfair on him to drop him after playing well. So that kind of, that's kind of basically the whole team picks itself. Unless you say, hey, Mason Mount's had a few more minutes, he can play as that 8 linking between Maynou and Bruno.
Maybe. I mean, I would think that biggest chance that we've got of getting a positive result lies in tactical surprise. I don't think we're going to see it, I'll be honest. I actually don't think we'll see Anthony. I think we'll bring Rashford back in, because for the same reason you would have thought Diallo would get some minutes tonight, but he didn't. Anthony did do well. I do think it was probably his best game for the club, but I don't think he's got I don't think he could not have Rashford in the team for 2 games in a row, even though he did nothing tonight. I think you lose a game and it's kind of like, well, the pressure's on to put him back in. Even though, I think the justification was in the performance. I think it was fine in that respect. I mean, there's just nothing there that suggests that United are going to get a result. But then again, there wasn't anything there before we played them in the cup that suggested that.
No.
We had a similar situation in terms of the injuries, just different injuries this time round. And so, on the merit that we pulled the rabbit out of the hat in that game, then there's always the chance. I just don't see it. And even if you do see it, And I don't want to be the eternal pessimist here, but even if you do see it, is it enough to invest faith in for the for however long? And I don't know. I just don't know. And I'm not saying this in the wake of like we've lost in the last minute against Chelsea, and it's all a bit sort of deflating in that in the nature in which we lost. But it's the pattern of the last few weeks of a manager who is losing control of an already difficult situation, and he doesn't seem to be coming back in sort of line for him. Yeah. And I don't like saying that. I want to see evidence of the change for that, but you know, I don't know.
I thought his press conference and interviews after the Brentford game, Ten Hag's, was pretty embarrassing. Made a lot of excuses and got very defensive. I haven't seen what he said tonight after this, but I note the defensiveness as a manager under pressure. Who knows he's under pressure?
Yeah.
And yeah. Well, look, I hope we get another victory. Obviously, it's got to that point though this season, like. And it's not that I don't care. Obviously, I care. I think, sleep, eat United, like to obsessive levels, obviously. But it's like there wasn't much riding on tonight. I don't expect United to qualify for the Champions League. It's hard to get excited about potentially coming fifth. Woohoo! I mean, I know it's important for the club to keep progressing and move forward, especially with the change, but I don't think it's going to happen, and I can't bring myself to hang everything on coming fifth in the league, another trophy and all of that. So the season does feel like it's winding down. Shouldn't do. We've got an FA Cup semi-final to play, and we've got Liverpool, then Bournemouth, then Coventry. These players shouldn't want to be in that semi-final. They should want to be in the cup final side. There's something there. Anyway, we'll leave it there, I guess. Not the most awesome performance from United or result. And, well, everyone's under a bit of pressure.